Welcome to the Systemic Mastocytosis edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the SM community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent with Rare Disease Advisor. We're at the American Society of Hematology Conference in New Orleans, talking with Dr. Jem Akin, a leading expert in the field of systemic mastocytosis. A specialist in allergy and immunology, Dr. Akin obtained his initial medical training in his native Turkey at Istanbul University. He later did his residency at the University of Louisville School of Medicine in Kentucky, as well as a fellowship at the National Institutes of Health. Dr. Akin is now a clinical professor at University of Michigan Health in Ann Arbor. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Please tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in hematology in general, and more specifically in mastocytosis, allergies, and immunology.
Sure. When I started my fellowship training at NIH, I got interested in mastocytosis because my mentor, Dr. Dean Metcalf, was interested in it, and they had just identified a mutation in a KIT gene called D816V-KIT, and my project was to look at different cell lineages to see if there's multi-lineage involvement. And of course, that's as hematology as you can think of. Although I was doing an allergy fellowship, I was very intimately involved with hematologic aspects of mast cell development. And as mast cells are involved in allergic disorders, of course, we have a vested interest as allergists to understand more about how they grow, differentiate, and get activated.
You currently treat all kinds of allergies, correct?
That's correct, yes.
For example, what are the most common?
Well, we treat the most common conditions are environmental, you know, so-called allergic rhinoconjunctivitis, seasonal allergies, food allergies, drug allergies, atopic dermatitis, asthma, which has a major allergic component to inhalant allergies. But we also see other disorders like chronic urticaria, for example, and eosinophilic disorders, and of course, last not the least, mast cell disorders.
This urticaria is sensitivity to sunlight, correct?
Well, there are different types of urticaria. One part of urticarias are caused by physical factors like exercise, friction. You can probably count sunlight exposure among those. But then a great majority of them are so-called idiopathic, and we don't know what is causing them. And those are all mediated by mast cells as their final cell of involvement.
So in general, systemic mastocytosis is considered a very complicated disease, and we understand it's actually several diseases, and its classification has changed over the years. How prevalent is it, and why is it so difficult to pin down?
Yeah, so it is a rare disease. It is seen in 1 out of 10,000 people at this point, and of course, that may be an underestimate to a certain extent because of underdiagnosis. So the disease presents in different ways in different people. There's about 40% of the patients are children, and they almost always present with skin lesions. And when you see the skin lesions, most of them are born with it, or they developed it within the first 6 months. There is usually no doubt about the diagnosis. If there is any suspicion, a skin biopsy could confirm that. But usually, both in children and adults, the skin lesions look fairly typical. Now, that doesn't mean that in adults, when they start, because they look typical, they are easily diagnosable. Because when they first start, they may be mistaken for freckles or bug bites or other lesions, and that leads to a delay in diagnosis. And even worse is when patients do not have skin lesions. There's about, you know, 20 to 30% of our patients do not have any skin lesions.
So then you don't know.
Yeah, then there's nothing visible. So they present with symptoms of allergic diseases, flushing, itching, stomach cramping, and so on. And those patients have very significant delays in diagnosis. I think an average delay in diagnosis from the onset of the symptoms is about 7 years. So these patients, unfortunately, go from one specialist to the next until somebody finally thinks about checking mastocytosis.
So that brings me to my next question, which is that life expectancy for patients diagnosed with systemic mastocytosis seems to vary greatly, depending on which variant of the disease they have. Could you elaborate on this?
Sure. There are two major groups of systemic mastocytosis. Now, I'm talking about just the systemic form, not the form that's seen in children that is only cutaneous. So in adults, most patients have systemic mastocytosis, and systemic mastocytosis has two broad categorization. One is so-called advanced mastocytosis, and the other one is called non-advanced mastocytosis. So you can think of these categories as perhaps closer to malignant and benign forms of disease. And each of these have their own subgroups. For example, the advanced subgroup has a variant called aggressive systemic mastocytosis, where the mast cells infiltrate into different tissues like bone marrow and gastrointestinal tract, liver, and interfere with the functioning of the tissue. Or they could be associated with another bone marrow stem cell disorder, and the life expectancy then becomes that of the associated stem cell myeloid disorder, usually a myeloproliferative or a myelodysplastic syndrome. And then lastly, there is the very aggressive category called mast cell leukemia with more than 20% mast cells in the bone marrow aspirate, and those patients have the least favorable life expectancy. On the other hand, there is the benign group, which is the non-advanced, and those patients make up the majority of all systemic mastocytosis patients. So about 70 to 80% of them will have this non-advanced. And among the non-advanced group, the most common category is indolent systemic mastocytosis. So those patients have an almost identical life expectancy.
But it's a little shorter, right?
Somewhat. Not necessarily. I mean, I think it is shorter if they advance into the one of the advanced categories. And that risk of advancement is about 3% overall. But if they stay within the indolent group, their life expectancy is almost very, very close to their age-matched controls. That doesn't mean that the quality of life is as good as people without mastocytosis. So not having an advanced disease is not necessarily a walk in the park for these patients.
So the burden of life and the quality of life, or the lack of quality of life for these patients, it's quite a burden.
It is, and it can be affected by many different things, including symptoms of mast cell activation, flushing, abdominal cramping, diarrhea, for example. Some patients go into these anaphylactic shock episodes, and these are very unpredictable. So they affect the patient's social life. The skin lesions are also, they can be significantly challenging to some patients from the cosmetic standpoint. So there are various reasons that this disease affects their quality of life.
In your presentation, you referred to a case of a 35-year-old male who had a history of these anaphylactic episodes and flushing, as you said, abdominal cramping, hypotension, loss of consciousness for over 2 years, but otherwise physical exam showed that he was healthy.
Yes.
Yeah. How is that possible?
Well, because they don't necessarily have another, they may not necessarily have another illness. They could have other things, just like other people in general population. But there are some patients whose presenting symptom is anaphylaxis. So in that case, for example, that patient was having unprovoked or untriggered anaphylactic episodes. But they could also be triggered by bee stings, for example. People who pass out have very severe allergic reactions to bee stings. About perhaps 10% of those patients may have underlying mastocytosis. So as we become more aware of those patients, we built a screening for mastocytosis into our allergy guidelines in evaluation of patients with bee sting or idiopathic anaphylaxis.
At the moment, two FDA-approved therapies, as I understand, are available to treat this disease, Rydapt and Gleevec. How do these compare?
Yeah, so they are both tyrosine kinase inhibitors, and that's probably the only common thing where it comes to mastocytosis. So imatinib or Gleevec is a wild-type KIT inhibitor. It is also it also inhibits other kinases like BCR-ABL. It's approved for use in chronic myeloid leukemia, for example. But in mastocytosis, because of its KIT inhibition, it can be helpful in people who do not have the typical disease-driving mutation, D816V KIT mutation. So it is not effective for the majority of patients because, unfortunately, the more than 90% of the patients carry this one particular mutation called D816V KIT, which confers resistance to Gleevec. Now, it was approved by FDA initially in patients with wild-type KIT or when the KIT status is not known, but now these days the KIT mutation analysis is so widely available that there are very few patients that actually qualify for imatinib treatment. Now, the Rydapt or midostaurin is a multi-kinase inhibitor. So unlike imatinib, it also inhibits many other kinases, and it also inhibits both wild-type and D816V mutant KIT. So, so in that sense, it is more of a, it inhibits the disease-driving mutation and is has a more comprehensive inhibition profile. But because it also inhibits many other kinases non-specifically, it also increases the side effect profile, especially with gastrointestinal side effects. Nausea and vomiting is something that we see with Rydapt treatment. And while that may be acceptable for patients with advanced disease, it is often unacceptable to patients with indolent disease. Plus, the biggest hurdle is it is not approved for treatment of non-advanced mastocytosis. Neither Gleevec nor Rydapt are approved for treatment of non-advanced. They are only approved for the treatment of advanced mastocytosis patients.
So what other therapies can we expect to see in the short term for systemic mastocytosis?
Yeah, so I would call them a third generation kinase inhibitor that is specific to the or selective to the D816V KIT mutation. So as I mentioned, imatinib does not have any activity, Rydapt has mixed, and now these third generation kinase inhibitors are selective to the D816V KIT mutation and not so much for the wild type. So one of those kinase inhibitors called avapritinib or AvaKIT has already been approved by FDA for use in advanced disease. And it is also in clinical trials, a so-called pioneer trial in indolent mastocytosis. There are two other kinase inhibitors, BLU-263 and bezuclastinib, that also has the same D816V KIT selective inhibition profile, and they're also in clinical trials in indolent disease. And again, at this time, none of these kinase inhibitors are FDA approved for indolent disease. But this is something that we may expect to see in the coming year or two, the emergence of these approvals, hopefully for our patients.
Hopefully. Dr. Ekin, thank you very much for talking with us. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.